Hey guys, if you're anything like me, you don't have a dad or a mom that can help you navigate corporate America. You're just out here thugging it out, trying to make it, trying to get promoted, trying to get the new opportunity, all that stuff. Whew. Listen, I'm creating a course and my goal is to help you set yourself up for success. And the result should be you should be eligible for promotion 18 to 24 months after you take this course. I'm so excited. I'm putting my heart and soul into this. Now, I just need to know, is this something you're really interested in? If so, go to trillmba.com and sign up in the pop-up. That way, when registration opens, you'll be the first to know. Thank you guys for all of your support. And again, if you have any questions or concerns, you can always email me at ask@trillmba.com. Now let's start the show. Welcome to the Trill MBA Show. I'm your host, Felicia Ann Rose A. Newha, AKA the trillest MBA you will ever know. And I'm here to help you survive and thrive in corporate America by giving you the truth and being as real as only I can be. As Black women, we find ourselves in some pretty rough and interesting situation at work. I know you guys know because you keep writing me about it, which keep writing me. I'm here for you. Many times these situations have nothing to do with our actual work product or results or like deliverables, but everything to do with soft skills like relationship building and interpersonal communication. Oh yeah, and just plain old institutionalized racism. In these times, we are being mistreated or bullied by our managers or our peers even. And we try so hard to fix these situations. Oh my God, I know you guys are with me. We just trying to thug it out. But what are we supposed to do when we can't fix it? And now we find ourselves in a meeting with our manager and HR. Well, today we are talking about what you need to do to protect yourself from the bad behavior of your coworkers, and when it's time for you to take yourself to the EEOC office and file a charge against your employer. Now, for this episode, we have a very special guest today, Anitra K. Brown. Excuse me, attorney Anitra K. Brown, Esquire. If you are on the internet, she is coming, you guys, because her passion and her drive to help us is beyond amazing. And you know that I only F's with the real ones. And she has been on these internets giving us trill advice about protecting ourselves against discrimination that we face in corporate spaces as Black women. But let me tell you about this badass sister lawyer. Attorney Anitra K. Brown, Esquire, is a Southern California native, and she is the Assistant Director of Admissions for Howard University School of Law. Go Bison. She earned her Juris Doctorate from Campbell University Law School in Raleigh, North Carolina, in 2014. Prior to law school, she obtained a master's degree in public administration, along with a Bachelor of Arts in French and a minor in English from Grambling State University. Well, you better work. Listen, degrees with multiple S's, okay? Upon graduating and passing the bar, Ms. Brown opened her own solo practice. By the end of 2014, she began practicing employment discrimination law and nonprofit law. She has represented clients through the EEOC process, as well as administrative, state, and federal cases. She quickly became the chair of the Starting Out Solo Committee of the Solo, Small Firm, and General Practice Section of the North Carolina Bar Association. In 2016, the NCBA invited Ms. Brown to lead the Future of Law Subcommittee of the Internet and Regulations Task Force, wherein Ms. Brown led the research and reporting efforts to the Board of Governors concerning legal innovation. In 2017, Ms. Brown began to make her way back to higher education as an admissions counselor at Campbell Law before transitioning to Washington, D.C. to work at Howard Law. Currently, Ms. Brown is a contributor to the second edition of African American Entrepreneurship, written by Howard University School of Law professor W. Sherman Rogers. In addition to providing counsel to students and graduates seeking to start their own law firm, Anitra is the founder of Employees Ed, the online course platform aiming to put employees on game about how to build their cases without losing their minds. Anitra, welcome to the show, girl.
Thank you so much for having me. My goodness.
You do a lot.
It sounded like a lot after you say it. And girl, I'm over here just trying to get through. Like every time I stop and get one, it's like, okay, what's next? But yeah, maybe, you know, we've got to stop and give ourselves probably. Yeah, so thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, this is amazing. I'm so happy to have you on the show today. I get so many emails about, should I file a lawsuit? Do I have a case? And I have to give the disclaimer like, yo, I'm not a lawyer, but these are the things I have learned.
Exactly.
And then I actually have sent a couple people to you, so I hope they got in contact with you here recently. But I was like, look, I don't know. Get with a lawyer, and here's the person I would recommend. So thank you so much for coming on the show. Thank you for being an advocate and having passion for employees, because let's be real, the law is not on our side.
It was supposed to be, but the execution is, it leaves a little to be desired for sure.
Yeah. So now, the first question I always want to understand is, where did this passion come from for helping people with these issues at work? Like, I know you got your master's in public policy, so I feel like you always had a lens on helping people, but why this particular part of the law?
Yeah, so this area of law really found me, and I think like most people, you first discover it when you're being discriminated against at work. So my very first experience was, hello, what are you going to do? So it's right. My first job right out of college. I was very fortunate to have people who wanted to hire me when the recession was just picking up, right? Yeah. So the last thing that you expect when you're excited about being at a job is, wow, there's somebody who's hating on me for no reason. I'm just trying to navigate that. And I can tell you, my very first experience was somebody who looked like us. And that's really confusing.
Girl.
It's so disappointing.
Can we talk about it for a moment? And I need to do a whole show about it. But okay. I feel like corporations have built this system, especially with Black people. And maybe I'm wrong with the especially Black people, but that's my lens because I'm Black. And what I've noticed is that when you work for a Black manager, it's as if you have these very unrealistic expectations that your white counterparts don't get from their managers. And in fact, it's a bit like hazing. And I'm like, but it's already hard. Like, you don't need to make it harder.
Right. So true. You know, there's something that's deep in our hearts and our souls, right? That when you get into this situation with us, that guard goes down. Like, finally, you know, I don't have to be on edge or walk on eggshells. But then welcome this whole other set of issues that are different than if the manager was white, but they're issues nonetheless. And that's so frustrating. And we really have to take a deep dive into the psychology of our people. But what I've experienced is that because we are climbing up this tower of getting our essential needs met and we're headed towards self-actualization, it's been so hard for our people that we tend to stop at just being okay, right? Yeah. I'm getting my paycheck, I'm stable. And that's such a luxury for us, unfortunately, that we begin to protect it and feel like anything could really threaten that. And unfortunately, that often results in turning against your own people in a workplace. So it's really unfortunate. That was one of my first experiences with employment discrimination.
Wow. You said that so eloquently. I couldn't have said it better. And that really is the root of it. I have this sad joke, and I say it's sad because I'm saying slavery, but literally you could ask a question and the answer could be slavery if you're talking about like work. So if I say, hey, Anitra girl, how was work today? You know, slavery girl. Like you literally could, and there would be an understanding.
Even to the separation of being inside the house, right? Mm-hmm. Knowing that some of us are going to have certain opportunities that others are not. Mm-hmm. And it's still based on something as awful as just the skin tone.
Yeah.
So, it's crazy that the parallels are still so relevant after so long, but arguably, you know, wasn't that long ago.
Right. But, you know, slavery. it's just the answer to everything. So in that situation that you had that kind of sparked your flame and kind of led you down this journey, as you got out of law school and you're transitioning to have clients, I want to get into what are some of the patterns of behavior from managers and senior leaders that you've seen? So we know the not so subtle ones, like, you know, calling you out your name or, you know, just the like, oh, well, Black person and da 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 da. Like, we know the blatant stuff that clearly the person who holds the office of president does all the time. And it really gets me when he says the Blacks. I'm just like,
I mean, what's the article right there? The really?
The Blacks. I'm like, what the hell? Like, it's like the donuts. Like what? Like what are you? Oh, anyway, what are these subtle signs that kind of happen over time that should raise a red flag for people?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I love the way you phrase that because my whole premise is that it actually is pretty predictable. Mm-hmm. When you're in the middle of it, of course, it just seems like everything is going haywire. You don't know what to expect in the very next few seconds, let alone tomorrow, right? Mm-hmm. But when you take a step back, what I've actually done is I've compared social science, since I come from a social science background, mm-hmm. with the law, and I've realized that you can actually really predict human behavior in a workplace and fit that right into available laws to really protect yourself. So some of the biggest things I see over and over, number one, if there's a common lack of respect, value for the employee. And it doesn't feel that way when somebody has selected you to become an employee for their company, right? Mm-hmm. This is what I've been waiting for. This is what we've been training for. However, one of the things that I teach is that you actually come into the organization at a very specific, defined level of value from the employer's perspective. A value system that they never tell you about, but they absolutely hold you accountable to. So I often find that I can listen to a potential client's set of facts mm-hmm. and immediately determine what level of value they entered their organization at. And that's just really consistent.
Wow.
Now, I give you a hint. It is not the very top value level of being an influencer. They did not bring you on to hear your opinion about the culture of a company. They brought you on to uphold the culture in your level, your position. And the moment you start rocking that boat is when there are problems every single time.
Every single time. And I just had a couple of episodes in the past couple of weeks. So there was one that I talk about getting this feedback about you're intimidating. And I'm like, and it's always comes before they start setting you up for the okie doke for that pip, right? And I'm like, oh, and I literally can be like, okay, you got that feedback. Are you on a PIP yet or not? And 9 times out of 10, it's like, yeah, I just got on a PIP, or I think they're about to put me on one. I'm like, yeah. And it is very predictable. But until you've gone through it a couple of times, I'm not admitting anything. You don't recognize it. But right. Then, you know, especially as I continue to talk to our corporate warriors out there, I continue to hear over and over again, like, you know, I got the wrong information, and then I was set up for this meeting, and then I was blamed for it, or I was thrown under the bus. And to me, that falls under that lack of respect.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's a trigger point for mm-hmm. the employer, that once they identify you as a threat to how they conduct their business, right? There's the business on paper, but then it's the culture of how things are really ran. Once you begin to threaten that, you begin to move down this value system. And the value system very quickly is something that I use social science and just my experience to come up with. But that very first level I told you about, it was mm-hmm. influencer. Right below that is necessity. So a lot of us, especially when we have advanced degrees, we come in at the necessity level. They need somebody in that position. Mm-hmm. They need you for a couple of reasons. Internally, to actually make the company work. And two, externally, because it's a business.
Right.
So they can leverage your prestige, the fact that you're a minority, and it's just another marketing ploy that can justify their prices.
Right.
Below necessity is worker bee, but below worker bee is nuisance.
Oh.
And once you get into this area, now you know that you're beginning to threaten their culture. And this is where the setups are going to start happening. And this is why they will tend to happen over like a long period of time instead of just an immediate termination. You're going to see those gains. Below that is liability. And that's when you're going to start seeing the very sudden, the very finite, final actions like termination.
Wow. I hate to tell you, but I feel a little triggered listening to you break that down in that framework, because I feel like I have started an organization, and like you said, necessity. So I felt like they needed me. I was there to do a certain job and I was getting that done. But then I've always been outspoken. I've always been a truth sayer. And I don't think I tied the two, because as I went along in my career, I tried to adjust and I tried to be positive and I tried to make change in good ways. But the real is they don't want to change. They brought your black ass in there as their diversity hire. And, you know, they have to meet certain numbers, you know, or the government's going to start looking at them, but that's only when somebody complains. So they trying to be a little preemptive, and they know, well, if I quote unquote show that I tried, then it's fine. But now here your black ass come and you trying to strive for diversity, and you know, you're trying to bring something to the culture, add to the culture. And they're like, no, we didn't really ask you for that. And so all of a sudden, now you're the problem.
You are the enemy. You're absolutely right. And, you know, I'll even give them the benefit of the doubt. There are plenty of organizations who they really think that they're down for the cause and they love all people, and diversity is just as much as part of the culture as drinking from the water cooler. Like, that is who we are. But when you put this model in place and you start challenging who they are, and you start moving down that value system, it comes to light that they're not as supportive and right. inclusive mm-hmm. as they would like themselves to think about the organization.
Right. And if you call them on it, if you actually tell them about it, they get offended.
They get offended.
They're like, how dare you say that? Like, I remember one time I was at a company and it was pretty male dominated. And there was a big work trip every year And it was one of those high visibility things if you got to go. So it was like, oh, you might be about to get promoted, or you just got promoted because you got to go and work. And so one of my coworkers came up to me to the copy machine, and it was a white male. And he was like, hey, Felicia. And I was like, hey, such and such. And he was like, hey, so are you going to said conference? And I was like, no, like, there are no women from our floor going to the conference. Come on now. And I literally said it just like that because I thought it was funny, like, that you even asked, like, you know what this is. Like, y'all have said to me, I had one-on-ones with people in the organization, men, white men in the organization, who said to me, we're so glad you're here, Felicia, because, you know, we've been such a good old boys club, but we're working on changing. And so I knew why I was there. They told me the token. Okay. I was okay with it because they also said they wanted to change. And I was like, wait, because I want to help you change.
We are always so willing to serve. Like, listen, yes, I will help you help yourself. Yeah.
Listen. And so then my boss and the VP snatched me into the VP's office, got all in my face. Like, I was looking at them like, either you back, or we gonna have some problems in this office. And you raising your voice at me, your name is not Wanda. You will not raise your voice at me. And so they were like, how dare you say that? Did you say this? How could you say this? You don't know who's going. You don't know. We haven't made the final list. This is just, this is disheartening after, you know, we brought you here and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, nigga, like, who do you think you're talking to? So that was the beginning of the end for me at that organization.
Right. It typically is. You become a nuisance and then just a straight up liability. Why? Because you said it out loud. Girl. And that's one of the other recurring patterns. These organizations will almost never admit to the wrongdoing. Mm-mm. Even if you get to the point of having a settlement, the reason why they're even writing you a check and it's built into this contract is that they are not admitting to any kind of wrongdoing. Just, you know, in order to make this go away quietly, we'll give you some money and you agree to go away and not say anything and never try to work here again. That's what the exchange is.
And that's why I tell people, do not sign anything before you talk to an attorney.
Because you don't know what they're putting inside that contract. Right. You know, I read one contract for workers' comp. You know, they were in, and they're very sneaky. It was for a workers' comp part of the claim. But built inside of the settlement agreement was an agreement to not bring any other EEOC charges against the company. And you'll often see that with workers' comp because they'll get hurt on their job. They can't come to work for a little bit. The company gets aggravated and they want to fire you. Well, not only do you have a workers' comp claim that you need to deal with, you now have an ADA claim. Right. You know, Americans with Disabilities Act. So resolve the workers' comp, which is a state level, completely separate statute, while we deal with a federal EEOC claim. And they'll try to get you to agree to let go of everything in just one agreement, but not pay you for both. And so it's when people send me those agreements, they hire me to read the agreement, and I'm telling the other side, nah, bruh, I see you. I see you. Do you see me seeing you? Because I see you.
Girl.
So important.
So outside of you becoming a nuisance, how should people look at their organization? Like, how do people determine if they're being treated fairly or not? Because in the last episode I had with an anonymous corporate warrior, she was talking about how her coworkers got to go to a training and they told her, oh, you can't go to the training. And you don't need to go to the training because you're a top-tier MBA. And I was like, wait, what?
Where did they do that at?
Right. And I was like, and the thing was, you hear about the patterns in the department or in the organization. Like, you hear, oh, this person treats these people like this. What should we do when we start seeing that kind of information and we're new to an organization?
That's a great question. You know, for me, it's a couple of things. And I see our people do this and my heart goes out to us because I know we're so genuine, right? Mm-hmm. We'll go into an organization and we'll feel such a sense of pride. Mm-hmm. That's where we are culturally, that when we get jobs, this is something to be proud of. Mm-hmm. I dress in Sunday's best on my first day of work.
Right.
Right. That's not how other cultures look at work. And so we can't take work so personally that we do not protect our needs, which are the same needs as any other colored person.
Amen. And I see that all the time.
Right. You know, and so one thing I listened to your podcast, so just hearing her talk about, I didn't want to believe that this was going on. That is so common.
Right.
Almost every single one of my clients will say that. I'll say, okay, why do you think this is going on? Well, I can't prove anything. Uh-uh. That's my job. That's why I went to school. That's why I passed the bar. I'm asking you, what is your gut feeling? And people are so uncomfortable with that gut feeling. But guess what? Discrimination is an emotional transaction. This is an extreme dislike or a hatred for a certain type of people. Yeah. And so the reason why you feel crazy is because you're receiving the emotional communication first before the cold hard facts.
Right.
I take your emotions, I work my way backwards, and I can put an entire case off of one conversation. So there are five things that every employee needs. I use Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but just very quickly, there are five things on that what was wrong. The most basic thing that we need is pay. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us will get the pay and feel, okay, this is good, because we know what being broke feels like.
Right.
Getting paid feels great. Right.
Right.
The next thing, you know, that an employee needs is that you need policy. You need safety. You need those boundaries. And so this is where when you are in an organization and something happens that makes you stop and go, huh, that's interesting. You need to write that down. You need to go check the policy.
Yeah.
Anything that just makes you stop and think about it for longer than you would think about a normal occurrence, you need to check on that. The third thing you need is you need partners. If you find that you're being isolated in a workplace, there's nobody to connect to, you need to investigate that. We spend more time at work with these people in that organization than a lot of times we do with our family. Mm-hmm. So studies show that, especially for women, so for Black women, if you have at least one like work best friend, you are more engaged at work, you are more productive at work, and you will be happier at work. And that type of satisfaction is important. It's important to being a human. Then you need progress. You need to know that you are headed towards some sort of development, that there are people who are interested and invested in your development, and that they're checking in on that. And last, you need purpose. And I think especially as the millennial generation, which I'm an older millennial, mm-hmm. And those coming after us, more and more you find that we will bypass the higher salaries for work that we feel very passionate about, going with organizations that share our value system. So you need those five things: pay, policy, partners, progress, and purpose. So whenever your needs are not being met in the organization, you need to stop and you need to first write it down and then really start asking yourself the hard questions about why that is.
Man, listen, we're going to have your contact information at the end of the show. I just want to put that out there, everybody. Just, you're going to get her information. Now, listen, let's say I see there's a problem. It's before the PIP comes. But I know it's probably coming, or something's coming, because every little thing I do, I can't do right. So at what point are you about to get a PIP? Are you a nuisance at that point?
Yes.
Okay.
You are a nuisance. They generally leave worker bees alone. If you are being picked on and singled out, you are now a nuisance. Mm. If you're just a cog in the wheel, there's no point to even mess with you. And tasks, that's one of the first things I tell my clients to look out for. So if they start messing with your tasks, adding things, to you so that you can't get your job done, taking things away and kind of alluding to the fact that you're incompetent or mm-hmm. changing it up, like you said. That's one of the things. So when you have, honestly, about 5 to 7 concrete things that you can point to, that is a really big indicator that you are a nuisance, at least, mm-hmm. and that they're coming for you.
Right.
What you have to do is you have to strike first. I teach my clients that we do not go to HR to see if we have a case. We go to HR when we have a case.
So wait, are you suggesting to go to HR? Because I tell people go to a lawyer before go to HR.
For clients who have my information, they're equipped to go to HR on their own. But when you have a case, when you can point to about 5 to 7 facts of things that they're doing, and that if I show this to the EEOC, they're not going to be happy about it, that's when you go to HR. We go to HR to put them on notice that if they don't fix, I'm going to the EEOC, and I have everything I need to do that today if you're ready to rumble. Of course, you probably want to say that a little bit more gently, but just kind of depending on where you are in right. the process, it will determine how hard you go. But yeah, you go to HR when your case is together. Now, if that's because you went to an attorney first, then great. But typically, most clients, before they hear about my information, or if they're not working with another attorney, most employees will only contact an attorney after they've been terminated. In right. fact, most employment attorneys, and I'm not mad at them, I understand why, most employment attorneys will tell you to give them a call after you've been terminated, because that's when the damages calculator starts, right? Mm-hmm. Every day you're missing out on work. Now the damages are getting higher. But if you go too early, you haven't technically lost anything. I'm the only attorney I've ever spoken to who likes working with clients while they're still at work. I prefer to build the case from the inside out, because that way you can approach documentation in a much more organized, focused manner. And you can start setting them up once you notice their patterns. You can put them in situations where you know they're going to discriminate against you. You let it happen and you document it.
God, I love you. I just
love you too.
I wish I had met you 10 years ago. But you hadn't gone to law school yet.
I'm glad you didn't. And it's so funny because, you know, the big case that I knew after dealing with this one case that this was what I wanted to spend my career on, she came to me kind of like a Nicodemus, right? Mm-hmm. And the guys of the night, you know, she didn't want anybody reaching out to her company because she still felt like that was a place that she could grow and she didn't want to make them upset. I was studying for the bar at this time, so all I did was just show her my research papers because I'd been studying this all through law school, mm-hmm. giving seminars and stuff. So, you know, I have dealt with people before I was technically licensed, but even then I noted that, wow, people just want information. They really just want to know if they're crazy or not.
That is why I do this show. That is the reason why I do this show, because I sat and spun in my head for so many years, so many different ways, looking at myself in the mirror, crying like, what's wrong with me? Like, I totally internalized all the bullshit. And now that I get all these emails from people and their stories, it's like watching a movie with different characters, but it's the same movie. It's like watching Groundhog Day over and over again. I'm like, this shit is sinister. And so
right.
I'm like, you are not crazy. So I want all my corporate warriors to know, you are not crazy. This is bullshit. I even met a young lady. I was getting my hair done a couple weeks ago and we just got to talking. It was something in her spirit. Like, you know, when you're getting your hair done, you should be happy. Like, that's a joyous thing to have somebody do your hair, right?
Freshing you up.
Yeah. Like, you know you're going to look fly. This is a professional. And she just seemed kind of sad. And so we got to talking because, you know, I'm an extrovert and I'm nosy. And so I was like, have you heard of podcasting? Like, do you listen to podcasts? And so she was like, yeah. I was like, oh, I have a podcast. And this is how I get people to like subscribe to the podcast. Like, I'll take their phones if they let me. I'm terrible. And I rate myself a 5. They ain't even heard the podcast. I'm like, you're going to like it.
I ain't even heard it.
You're going to like it. Trust me. You Black. You're going to like this. And so we got to talking, and she looked and the episode, you know, are you intimidating the whites at work, was up, and she was like, oh my God, like, this is what I need to listen to. And so then she started telling me the story about how she was on a PIP. I said, let me guess, it didn't have nothing to do with your actual work. She was like, no. And she was like, they said it was how I was behaving at work, and like, you know, I'm a direct person, but I'm an introvert. So I don't really want to have time to kiki and kaka with you. And all I want to do is just get my work done. And she works in a type of situation where she's an individual contributor. And so it's not really a lot of interaction she needs to have, but, you know, every little interaction she has is being scrutinized. And they're like, you're intimidating us. And they put her on a PIP. And then they told her, oh no, we see improvement. She said, I haven't done anything different. I have no idea what's happening. And I told her, I said, here's my information. You called me because we can work it out. Because what I'm good at is I've made so many mistakes now that I've figured out how to coach people on how to turn those situations around from the people perspective and the relationship building perspective and the things to say and the things not to say and how to handle yourself so that you get your best possible outcome. And so I said, these are the things you need to do and you need to get a lawyer. So that's the first thing I told her. You need to get a lawyer. But in the meantime, make sure you're smiling and you're happy and no complaints. Don't bitch. Just keep going, document everything. I told her we're in Texas. I said, record these conversations with your phone. Record everything. And so I wanted to get your advice on that because I know you work in all the states. And so Texas is one of those states where we have a one-party eavesdropping law. So I can be in a room with you, and as long as I'm in the conversation, I can record it. And I don't have to tell you, but every state is not like that. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on recording some of these conversations, especially when they pull you into HR and that bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I am licensed in North Carolina, but because I practice federal EEO, I can practice in all of the EEOC agencies in the country. Mm. So I can't give everybody advice in their individual state. So I would say consult an attorney or look it up. If you do a Google search on two-party consent states, it does say that about 11 states require both parties to agree. So all the other states, you can just have one party, which is just like you said, as long as one person agrees, and that person being you,
right,
you can record. So after you look at your state laws, look at your employee policy book, handbook. Mm. If it's explicit that you can't record because there's now an expectation of privacy, you're going to have to adhere to those rules. But, you know, at the end of the day, I really don't think that that is the most important piece of evidence.
Really?
And the reason why, very few employers are direct with discrimination these days.
Mm.
So more often than not, the recordings kind of just play a role in saying that you weren't kind of like doing certain things if they're lying on you. But that's going to be helpful for an actual court case. But less than 1% of the cases that are even given a right to sue letter are even taken to federal court. And then even a less amount of that they actually make it to a jury trial. So what we're mainly dealing with is getting through the EEOC process and maybe starting a case, because more often than not, the cases are going to settle. So recordings they're okay, but rarely do you get one that's just like that bombshell information that makes or breaks a case. I coach clients on other ways of gathering evidence that are just way more effective in getting the other side to bow down and come up with a settlement that's worth your time.
Oh, okay. We're going to have her information at the end, you guys. Hold on. So now, let's say, you know, all the shit hit the fan and you know, like, you've got your 5 to 7 indicators, like, you got left out of meetings, you've been given wrong information, you can't get any help from your managers, or they try to make it seem like you're incompetent when you ask them for help, which is crazy, especially when you're new, like the corporate warrior on the last episode. So, like, you have all these things, these bullet points. You know something is wrong, and you know deep down you're not crazy. You're just confused. So at that point, you get a lawyer, and the lawyer's like, yeah, we need to go ahead and be preemptive. We need to go to the EEOC. So let's talk about, for those people who don't know what the EEOC is, we're going to talk about who they are and what they do exactly. And so I'm just going to read from their website real quick so we have factual information of who they are. And then my question to you, Anitra, will be, when is that right time that you know that you need to go to the EEOC? So first, who is the EEOC and what do they do exactly? Okay. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The EEOC enforces federal laws that make it illegal to discriminate against a job applicant or an employee because of the person's race, color, religion, sex, including pregnancy, gender identity, and sexual orientation, national origin, age, 40 or older, disability, or genetic information. It is also illegal to discriminate for complaining about discrimination, filing a charge of discrimination, or participating in an investigation or lawsuit. The federal laws apply to all types of work situations, including hiring, firing, promotion, harassment, training, wages, and benefits. So now, when do we escalate to this point of going to the EEOC?
Yeah, great question. First of all, that webpage has not been updated since the Trump administration. And I can tell because they have gender identity and sexual orientation included. LGBTQ protections are really up in the air since the Trump administration.
Whoa.
It was very important under Obama administration, but right now the EEOC is looking for either the legislature or DOJ to come out with something explicit on how they want them to deal with LGBTQ claims.
Oh, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. It's a big controversy. There's a circuit split right now, meaning the courts of appeals in the different regions where these go all the way up to the court of appeals. Some courts of appeals say gender identity and sexual orientation is included underneath the gender category. Other courts of appeals have said no. If Congress wanted to include that, they should have said it explicitly. Right now, we are looking for one of two things to happen. Either Congress to go back and clarify the law, which is definitely not going to happen in a divided
right.
Congress, right? Or getting one of these cases in front of the Supreme Court and having them give the final word. So until that happens, it's kind of like a it's really a toss-up. I encourage people to still go after those claims, but just don't be surprised if you don't gain a lot of traction. So that's what I'll say about that.
Well, thank you for letting us know that, because I just assume, like, that's just...
Yeah, I mean, under Obama administration, I would walk into the EEOC and there would be the LGBTQ posters. I mean, they were very proud of the fact that the agency not only included them, but it actually become one of their preferred categories to really go after. So back in, I would say, yeah, towards the end of 15, most of 16, this was like, you know, we're such losers as attorneys, but like, oh yeah, that's a sexy area of law right there, because it was new, it was fresh.
Right.
You know, and the EEOC got their hands on one of these, they were giving people the business. I've never been more proud of the EEOC than when they were like really excited about making sure that everybody is protected.
Right.
I do believe everybody deserves protection in the workplace. Under the Trump administration, I ain't seen that poster since. I ain't seen the poster, girl.
God damn. Y'all call y'all congresspeople. And I'm in the episode show notes, I'm going to put information to get in contact with your congressman or woman. And we need to be calling them and saying, like, look, you represent me and this is my expectation of you. Oh, God, help us. Okay.
Oh, the EEOC.
Yes.
Created, you know, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, created 1964, and created this commission that was going to oversee all these charges, right?
Right.
The problem when it was created is that it didn't have any power. They called it the Toothless Tiger because it didn't have any power to bring court cases against anybody. It meant nothing that the EEOC was even involved. So an amendment by 1990, Congress finally got smart and said, we should probably give them some teeth. This is when the EEOC had the power to now bring cases against employers. So as long as your employer has at least 15 employees, you can take advantage of the federal EEO laws that are found in Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The Americans with Disabilities Act, the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, and a few of the newer ones. But those are pretty much the largest ones. But about 50% of all claims filed with the EEOC are retaliation claims. And so what usually happens with me and my clients is that they'll come to me with an initial, hey, I think I'm being discriminated against because of race or sex. But by the time I get involved, I always set the employer up for a retaliation trap. So the retaliation claims tend to be stronger and more straightforward than the underlying discrimination claim. Statistically, race claims are the least successful. And for those that actually make it through and get settled, they're always the lowest settlement amount. Mm-hmm. This country still does not like to admit that we have racial tensions and issues in this country, in a workplace, anywhere really. So, so the EEOC definitely helps. You have to submit your claim. If you have a federal claim that you want some kind of help on, if you ever want to have a remedy for that, you first have to submit it to the EEOC. So when you have exhausted all possible opportunities to either one, go back to a calm work environment, or two, enter into a contract for settlement, when it's time to take it to the legal, you are going to have to go through the EEOC first, unless there's a state process that you would prefer to go through. And usually your state agencies are partners with the EEOC.
And so what's the time limit? Because I know for Texas, because there's this state partner, we get 300 days from the last offense.
Yeah. So generally, the safest bet is to go 180 days mm-hmm. because of these partnerships. And depending on whether or not you work for state government or whatnot, it could be extended to 300 days. But inside the law, the very first and most important and most common time frame, statute of limitations is what we call it, is the 180 days. And what also is important to know is all of the stuff that you want included as a claim, make sure that falls within your 180 days. So let's say you get fired on December 31st, but they were also treating you like crap, you know, 7 months prior to that. If you fall on December 31st, you could go back for the past 6 months, but maybe that thing that happened earlier in the year, you won't be able to include it as a claim per se, but you can certainly use it as additional evidence that things were going awry.
Okay. That's good to know. But this is why documentation is so important.
This is why documentation is really important. When I first started practicing, I was so excited about the EEOC. And there are some fabulous advocates who work for the EEOC. However, temper your expectations, because especially at the intake level, you are not talking to attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And the frustrating thing about that is all of these little facts that you think are really important, they're doing a couple of things. They get over 80,000 claims a year. They are under-resourced. They are mm-hmm. understaffed. They can't take all of those. So what the EEOC is really looking for, they're looking for those cases that they are going to take. Everybody else is going to get a piece of paper saying that they can take the case on their own.
Okay.
So if the EEOC isn't jumping up and down about your case, don't be discouraged. Just know it's impossible for them to really take all of those cases. However, it's my vision that with my information, we're going to flood the EEOC with so many claims, they're going to be forced to get some more resources.
I love that vision because they definitely do need resources. I can attest to that. I've seen it. I've been in the Dallas EEOC office and it was bare bones staffing. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't imagine how many people come here every day and it's only a handful of y'all. And it's just, it's too much. It's too much. Yeah, it's crazy. But I was going to ask you, when it comes to the EEOC and documenting to prepare for that path, what is the biggest mistake you see employees doing that sometimes you don't catch them in time?
Timing from when they start documenting. So if you want to have an admissible piece of evidence that is not inadmissible, the truth that the court is always, the fact that the court always really wants to look at is how accurate is your account? And there are a lot of things built into the rules of evidence to kind of check this. But I see a lot of employees getting to the end of all the issues and sitting down and trying to document everything. Really, when something happens, you need to document it within about 9 minutes.
Okay.
Within 9 minutes, because your memory is fresh. You're going to catch the details that you won't remember later on down the road. Another thing that you need to look for when you're documenting is pay attention to the people who were involved and also the people who are not involved. Those people who are not involved are usually the people being treated better than you. So that is going to be really important information because the EEOC is going to want to know who are your comparators. Who can yes. we point to in the organization who is in your same or similar position but being treated differently than you and they're outside of your protected class? Because we talked earlier about direct evidence and how hard that is to come by, there's a very complicated scheme that allows you to prove certain things using indirect evidence. And a huge part of the indirect evidence is comparing how you were treated versus to somebody who was outside of your class.
Okay. That's good to know. So don't get frustrated when you see Bob and Becky being taken to lunch, when you see Bob and Becky get to do that special project for the VP, when you see Bob and Becky get to go to professional development events and you knew nothing about it, just write it down.
Get excited.
Write it down. Yes, write it down.
I love that. And because, so, of course, as your attorney, I would get excited like, oh, yes, honey, I love that. Oh, yes. I love that kind of stuff. People are like, you should not be this happy about this. But I know on the back end, we are putting together such an airtight case that even if the EEOC doesn't jump at it, just the prospect of us winning in court is going to pressure the employer to settle. So it's important to have these solid cases built while you're getting a paycheck.
Right.
And then you'll sit there and use some of your paycheck to hire an attorney. And they know she's here collecting evidence. We're paying her to pay an attorney. You know, a lot of times employers will flip out. And some of my highest cases, you know, six-figure settlement offers have come before because the people inside the workplace got so emotional and so fed up, they fired them and they knew they was wrong. You're going to have to write me a check.
Amen. Right. Us checks. If we got to go through this bullshit, ladies, at least let us get some checks.
Get some checks. I love getting checks. Yeah. The bank be asking, do you work for this corporation? And the way I do. They write me checks. They write me checks and I'm cashing them bad boys. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Anitra, I want to thank you for coming on the show and just giving us some nuggets about how to protect ourselves and things to think about as we go into our workspaces. And if you know, and ladies, you know, don't try to rationalize it away. You know when your boss is coming for you, when people aren't being receptive to you, when you're being isolated and ostracized, when, you know, you feel like that boot is on your neck. You know it. Don't wait. Come get help. Don't sit there and try to thug it out. Don't just up and quit. Okay? Do not up and quit. Get help. Ask for help. I don't know why we don't like to ask for help as Black women, but we got this superwoman complex thing. We got to get rid of that shit. We got to ask for help.
You know what it is?
What?
We feel like we did something wrong, and so there's a sense of shame there. Like, we can control so much about other people that if I had done X, Y, Z, I wouldn't be here. So then you start to feel guilty and full of shame because it's your fault. But this is not your fault. Like, what's going on is really somebody else's problem. They really do need to fix it. And you only benefit yourself and other people by speaking out.
Come on, somebody just tell me. Ooh, yeah.
So, Anitra, I want to thank you for coming on the show today and sharing all of your expertise with our corporate warriors. Please let us know how we can connect with you. So, I want to know if we have a case or we think we have a case, where do we contact you for that?
Yeah, absolutely. I can be reached at employeesed.com. That's actually my company where I have the online course. We just tested that. So if you want that information, that's available on the webpage. And if you have some questions legally, you can email my law firm at akb@anitrakbrown.com. Not only am I taking some limited cases, you know, I do work at Howard Law and I love it. I'm helping to handpick the next generation of attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
But I am working with attorneys and I'm certifying them in my method of being able to build these cases from the inside and out. So I'm also partnering with some amazing attorneys who'll be able to help you as well.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay. And then how can we check you out on these internets? Are you on Instagram? You're on Facebook? Like, how do we find you out here on these socials?
Yeah, so I'm on Facebook. You can go directly to my page at Employees Ed. So yeah, check me out on Facebook. I'm going to get an Instagram one day, but really I'm so information-based and people mm-hmm. ask me for advice. We just use more words. So a little bit more in-depth than Twitter. So we just on Facebook, you know, working on it.
That's fine. Most people own Facebook anyway. And basically Instagram is Facebook. So
you what?
And don't shoot me, you social digital people. Don't even get mad at me.
They like the pictures.
Exactly. I'm like, but Facebook is just getting all that money. So don't.
They're getting all the money. We need to be like Facebook.
I know,
we
right?
We need to be like them. And that's the thing. There are some great things that we can learn from our workplaces. We just got to be there long enough to have that even happen.
Amen. Can we just get a promotion? I mean, good
God. Is it going to kill you to promote me?
Right.
But you know what? If we insist on our rights and there's enough of us doing it, they're going to have to bend. Right now, employers don't really have a large incentive because so few of us can afford to mm-hmm. even stand up for ourselves. But if you are using this information ahead of time, you can build this case and it's going to be very hard to ignore you. Employees have power. That's my messaging. We have so much more power than you think. And going back into the workforce and as wonderful of an institution that I work at now, you know, I still have to be cognizant of everything that's happening. I can never be too in love with the place, right? To mm-hmm. say, you know, I don't have to be attentive to my needs. So, and you know, I'm using my own information in the workplace and it is solid. Fortunately, I work at an amazing place. So, you know, everybody's all right.
Yes. But something I want people to really hear that you just said is that you have to tend to your needs. We have to tend to our needs, ladies. Oh, my God. This has been so amazing. I cannot wait for people to hear this on Sunday. Thank you, Anitra. And as always, if you need some help or advice about specific work situations, and not legal advice, this is before you need Anitra, then hit me up at trillmba.com/coaching to schedule your free 30-minute consultation with me to strategize and walk through your specific work situation. In addition, you can always email me at ask@trillmba.com. I'm happy to either help answer your question or connect you to the right person if I don't have the answer. And you can always find me on these internets. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. Oh, goodness. All of them at TrillMBA Show. All the spaces. I'm out here. I'm not hiding. Felicia and Rose A. Newha on LinkedIn. I'm here and we want to help you. I think that's the reason why Anitra and I connected, because we both want to see you living your best work life. We want to see you thrive. We want to see you put your needs first. And so that way you can be the best value contributor and influencer in these spaces. And that helps you bring in more diversity right behind you. And that's our goal. So Anitra, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, we will definitely have all of her info on the website when this show is live. And you guys, just stay positive. Keep your head up. You're not alone. We are here. So hit us up. And until next week, you guys, keep it trill. The Trill MBA Show is a Fair World Corp. LLC production, executive produced by Felicia and Rose A. Newha. Music is Kick Push by Ryan Little. Keep it trill every day, y'all.